Coming to you from the Deep South, this is the Blue Collar Leadership Podcast. High impact leadership is not reserved for leaders, and it has nothing to do with your position, title, or rank. However, it does have everything to do with your character. It's time to climb to the next level and beyond, personally and professionally. Now, let's start making it happen with your host, Max Story.
Hello, and thanks for listening to the Blue Collar Leadership Podcast today. So if you're familiar with the Real People Getting Real Results series, you already know I also show this, the video recording of this episode is on the Blue Collar Leadership YouTube channel. Go to youtube.com/@Blue Collar Leadership, and there's a playlist for this series, and you can actually check it out. So there'll be some things on the screen that if you're listening, you're not going to see it, obviously, but if you want to go check out the video, you can see it. So got a very special guest here with me today, Mr. Ken Kilgore Sr. from out in Houston, Texas. And let me tell you, if you're driving, you better tighten up your seatbelt. If you ain't driving, just go find yourself a helmet, because Mr. Ken gets you fired up. He gets me fired up. Mr. Ken, I'll run into the screen while you're talking today. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Yeah, man. So tell everybody, I always start out with telling people how do we know each other? Because I only feature people that I know at some level.
Well, as most things, I look into them. Jeff Kilgore, my youngest son's our CEO at Kilgore Industries. And he was searching. He's always searching for ways to better lead the organization. And he just, in his search, stumbled onto Blue Collar Leadership. And when he bought books and we started getting into it and with the invitation and y'all came out, you and Rhea, and we just had a day and a half, and it was awesome, and been hooked ever since.
Yeah, that was back in 2018. That's a while back.
Yes, it was.
And I know we got to meet you. You remember us. I know you remember it. And we got a treat for you, because I'm going to show it to you again and to the audience. They may have heard about it, but never seen it. But you remember, you come up and talk to us because we told that Ralph story.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
and that Ralph story, we talked about how Rhea and I had quite a learning adventure down through there. And mainly it was me learning that I was responsible for what I was going wrong in the boat that day. But we finished out strong. You remember that? We went through that. I told that story about going through that really crazy rapid at the end. And
oh yeah,
and we come out strong right there. So Rhea's got a picture of that back there. I don't know. Yeah, there it is.
Yep.
So that's the way we ended up, but that ain't the way it went the whole time.
But she wasn't ready to go again.
No, we still ain't winning again like that. She got all she could handle out of that one trip right there. We've been in separate boats ever since. But we got it right, though. We didn't get divorced over it. That's what I was worried about to start with.
There you go.
But when we got to talking, what was really cool, and one reason, I mean, you're just so much into personal growth. I mean, you're into it big time. And I know the person who most impacted me with my growth is Stephen R. Covey, the author of The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And I know I got to talk with you that time. I mean, I've talked to you a bunch of times since then, but that first day, and you were talking about you got to meet him. Yeah. You mind sharing some of that story? To me, that is like just unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty cool. So I've still got my original 7 habits of highly effective people. And I was looking at it this morning, and now it looks like I've misplaced it, but it was like he published in 1989 is when he published, but he came to TD Industries, is where I was working in Dallas at the time, and he came and he was doing it as a seminar and organizational development, that type of presentation. And it was before he even wrote the book. He was accumulating data, but a lot of stuff that's in the book like the two pictures that are different, but superimposed, they look the same.
Yeah.
And he actually pulled me up on stage, and I was one of the people that was trying to explain why we weren't seeing the same picture. One of us is seeing a young woman, the other one's seeing a mature lady. Yeah. So it was awesome. It was just amazing. And I followed him ever since. So it was a real special treat.
Yeah, that picture, that's where he teaches that lesson on paradigm, right? How we see the world. We see the world as we are, not as it is.
Right.
And that's phenomenal. And, you know, where I've got to know you most is on those Saturday calls that Jason does. And once a month he does those Saturday calls. And you're the star of the show. Everybody can't wait for you to be. Whatever you got to say at the end, and you always speak at the end, and you always taking notes, and it's phenomenal. I just want to share with my listeners real quick, you know, what that looks like. Basically, Jason volunteers to lead anybody in the company through basically an hour and a half the first Saturday of each month, and it's open to the public. That you guys have all kind of people. I introduce people to that call through to Jason, and they get on, and Jason's got people who may want to come work at Kilgore who don't work there today that they get on, and then you got the people there and their families, and everybody's volunteering. Rhea and I get on, we volunteer to be there, you volunteering to be there, all those people, and it's just one way that Jason leads, showing that he's on the team, leading, doing his part. He does lots of other things too, but can you just share, because a lot of people, Mr. Ken, in the blue collar industries, I hear all over the country from all kind of people when I first meet them. Usually, the blue collar folks, they don't want to read books. They ain't into this personal growth and development, all soft, warm, and fuzzy stuff. But you know better, I think. Can you share what you see and experience?
Absolutely. I didn't like to read. Never liked to read. Wasn't a great student. I was worse than not a great student. I was the fourth quarter in high school, and somebody's got to be the foundation to hold up the rest of the class, right? It's a big responsibility, and I held up my end because I barely got out of high school. But I learned that we're all searching for our way through this crazy world and this crazy life and finding our path. And you just can't do it without books. You cannot do it. And I was always glad when they had, when I could get it on audio. First it was cassettes and, you know, VHS and then cassettes. And I really liked that. In fact, if I checked out a book, I want lots of pictures. I don't want like lots of words. I want lots of pictures. So, but audio, and I get a lot of windshield time. So I wear out that audio.com, and I'm so fortunate, that, you and Rhea, your books are on audio and available, cause I can hear them over and over and over again. Every single time I go through one, get another nugget. So I can't say enough about it. I like country western. I like pretty much all music, and I used to listen to it all the time. And I just go, I ain't got that much time left. Don't know how much time I got left, but I know I don't have as much as I had yesterday. So I don't want to waste any of it. And the more I can learn, hopefully, the more I can help some of these younger folks, this next generation, dodge some of the pitfalls that I had to struggle through.
Yeah, that's awesome. And we're going to talk about your career here in a minute, and where you been and where you at, where you going, and all that kind of stuff, because you haven't let off the gas. It don't matter how old you are. And maybe you'll share that with us in a bit when we're talking about it. Not because it's just one reason I wanted you to be on here, just because how old are you? I'm going to ask you right now if you don't mind telling them.
77.
Yes. That's phenomenal. And you're sitting there at work. You ain't let off the gas, man. I just love it. And so that's why one of the reasons I wanted you to be on, just because you're such an inspiration to people. So we're going to just go ahead and jump into that right now. Cause you just got certified with some kind of license or something. What's Jason always talking about? He was so proud of you about, what is that?
Well, when Jason came on board, We'd had electrical department, but it had always struggled. And we got it by default. One of our clients, they had a electrician that was failing and going into default. And so they said, can we just tuck that group into Kilgore and finish this job for us? And so that's how we got in the electrical business. We were in mechanical and plumbing, and the boys were raised in that side, but not electrical. And so I was teaching NCCR curriculum for apprenticeship in HVAC and plumbing and all the related trades. And I was interested in electrical and teaching and bringing on more apprentices in the electrical side, and never had that support with before Jason came on board. So I sent him to NCCR and he got certified as an instructor, and along with several other folks that he brought with him and or followed him over quickly. Yep. And that NCCR training, I signed on as an apprentice, because to train, which I love to train, you have to have at least a journeyman electrical license. And I said, well, that's going to take 4 years. You got to have 8,000 hours, and you got to have 4 years. You got to have 144 hours of classroom instruction. And then you apply. Once you've completed that, you apply to take your exam, and then you go to the state and you test out. And he was proud of me. He said, you're going to make 100. And I said, well, I didn't make 100, but I passed and I got my license. So
how long ago was that, though? Not long, right?
Oh, it was just it was March of 23, just last year.
Yeah, a year ago. So you were 76.
And he said, when are you going to get your master's? And I said, I got to get I need 1,000 more hours. So I think October 3rd is when I submit my application.
Wow. You're going to do that?
I am going to do that
this year for a master's in electrical license.
Yes,
what do
sir.
They call it? Master's.
It's a master electrical license. Texas.
Wow, that's
native Texas.
That's so awesome. Yeah. I'm just so proud of you. And I know you always reading the personal growth stuff. So when did you actually, let's share a little, we'll come back to this leadership development stuff, but tell us about your career, you know, when you graduated high school, like that sort of thing. What part of your story do you want to share? I'd like to know your career, but anything personally or professionally about you, your story.
Well, you know, if I get too personal, I'll start crying. So
it's all right.
Careful where you go.
It's all right. That just means it is real. That's the good stuff right there.
You know, I didn't have a real strong self-esteem. My it's kind of a dead end kid, lived on 22nd that was a dead end, and not a lot of kids. And it's almost like being a country. Now it's inside Loop 610 in Houston, Texas, but it was the country then.
Yeah.
And I just never was a good student, had some dyslexia and some of that stuff. They didn't even know what it was back then, or didn't diagnose it. I struggled, but I liked to work. Had a neighbor that was a roofer, and he had a kid about my age. We were in school together, and he said, man, dad'll pay us to pack them shingles up, because those older guys, they won't be packing those shingles. They won't sit around and be tacking them on and get paid piecework by the bundle. So they don't be packing shingles. And man, we're young. I'm 10, and I'm getting a nickel a bundle to carry those things up. They're 80 pounds.
Wow.
I probably didn't weigh 90.
You probably didn't.
Yeah. I was blessed. I like to work. I like physical work. Now, sometimes working my brain is I push back on, but I've gotten over that too. I know that's essential. But if it was a grassy yard, we would jump off the roof just to get that, beat each other back to the pile. So
yeah,
we got the most nickels. I had more money than he and I had more money than any of the other kids in school. And when we finish get them all on the roof, then we got 50 cents a bundle for tacking them on. So I just liked work. And I don't think everybody does, but I just like to sweat and get dirty and always have.
Wow. That's outstanding. So you didn't start out as an executive VP, Sam?
Oh, no. I never even imagined myself as an executive. I got out of high school in 65 and graduated and immediately got married. Marianne was a year ahead of me. She went to TWU in Denton long enough to know she didn't want to do that. And she came back and we got married right away. And I went to work for General Electric. And I could relate to your story because we manufactured all the framework and the rails and everything for switch gear, power panels and lighting panels. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I quickly start you off on the easiest machine, just tapping. And, I'm 18 and fighting acne, and they got these oil sprays on them. It was nasty. Wow. It's just a nasty environment, but I loved it. And all these guys they're looking after you. They say, look, kid, don't do this or don't do that. You're going to be punching holes in your hand or threading your fingernail with the tapper. And so
that's the truth, though, ain't it?
It's true. And I quickly moved up the line and I moved from fabrication of the base materials quickly to assembly. And man, I was just another gear for me. I loved it. You had to go pull your parts and then you had to assemble it. And some of these older guys, they had kids like me. But man, I did that for a year. And my boss left and went to work for HPD. He and his brother both left GE and went to work for Houston Police Department. And they said, and they didn't have somebody else to put me with. And so I said, I can do this. And so I was a cruel one. I don't need no helper. And pretty soon these older guys, they might have them and two helpers. And we had the same project. And I'd race to get my project to inspection before theirs. And they would hold mine back because they'd, oh, we don't make the old man look bad. And so everywhere I worked, there was always saying, slow down, kid, you're making this look bad. I said, man, my dad said 8 for 8. I'm here to learn. I'm here to earn. I'm wanting to climb the ladder. So that was my introduction to factory work, but I cut a knuckle on a bandsaw, and I caught a hand in a handbrake, and I had a few stitches and stories to go along with it. But I just go right back at it, and after 3 years, Marianne and I got married, and I just turned 19. We got married when I was 18. I just turned 19. 2 months, and we had our first child, Natalie, who is a blessing. I think she's eligible for sainthood. She's just a joy.
That's outstanding.
And then I turned 20, and 2 weeks later had Ken Jr. And
okay.
Our parents were petrified. Y'all know what's causing that, right?
Did you know?
Well, we figured it out. They said, get a TV. It's cheaper.
But you didn't figure it out after Ken Jr., though.
Yeah, Jeff was about 4.5 years later. And but, man,
just forgot. You figured it out, but then you forgot.
That's right. And they were a blessing in several ways because on my 18th birthday, I got called down to the draft office and they said, well, we're gonna it was Tet offensive buildup, and they were looking for live bodies, and they said, did your your status change? And I said, yeah, I'm married. Well, we're not taking married guys yet, so they sent me home. A year later, they called me back. I was 19. They said, has your status changed? I said, well, I'm married. Yeah, we're taking married guys now. We need bodies. And I said, and I got a child and one in the oven. And they said, get out of here. We can't afford it. They sent me home. So those precious babies saved me that senior trip to Vietnam. So I appreciate all the people that have sacrificed and served our country. And but I never was sorry I missed that trip. Didn't turn out to be a popular war. It's none of them should be, but that one was really divisive for our country and painful. But I had a lot of buddies that went, and I love them all and appreciate their service.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. I didn't realize that our beginning story was so similar.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I could relate to everything you said. And then, but at 21, I'd only been there 3 years, and I topped out. I was at the top level that you could attain as just a fabricator and assembler. And I went into HR, and Jim Ott, I think was his name. I said, Jim, man, I got mouths to feed. You know, let's what I got to do? He said, man, you work for GE. You're going to have to go to college. I'm like, oh, man, that is the last thing I want to hear out of your mouth. I got to go to college. I hate school. But I said, okay. And they had a program where money was tight. And they said, we will pay you. And we pay percentage based on the grades you make. And I go, well, I'm, you know. I was a C minus student at best. I go to apply, and there was a downtown college called South Texas Junior College. And I went to apply, and they said, well, you got to take these aptitude tests. And they said, you're not even strong enough to get in on probation. So first I had to take English and college English prep and a college math prep that summer to get in on probation in September. But I got in, and it was two floors of One Main Street, which I think is about probably an 8-story at One Main Street downtown. And it was rat infested. You parked down under the viaduct, and you walked up these nasty staircases to the floors that were occupied. But we were blessed with some great instructors out of Texas A&M. I mean, great. And so I started taking engineering graphics and design and drafting. And I was making it straight A's, and I was going, how did this happen? And, you know, mouths to feed and good instructors that were looking after you made all the difference.
And you were not going because you had to. You were going because you wanted to then.
Yep.
Whole compared different, high school.
Whole different deal. That's right. In fact, when I was in high school, I met where I met Mary Ann was Heights Hospital. Both of our moms were nurses. And we were working summer jobs at Central Supply, and I was 15 and she was 16, and I was in, it was love at first sight, or at least what I thought love was at the time. we just got lucky and found each other early. So we've been together 58 years.
What an accomplishment.
I would not call it, Marianne says, probably 30 years of wedded bliss. The rest of them are up and down. You've heard some of that story too.
Yeah, I know about your rap story too.
But in 3 years, I immediately got some good basic drafting skills, and they moved me into engineering. I had that opportunity. And I worked in engineering drafting for 3 years, and I kept going to school. But in 71, Nixon.
Let me interrupt you, Mr. Ken, though. You're still at GE?
Yes, sir.
Oh, and you're just moving up because
you're. Yeah, I'm just moved. I moved into engineering, and I'm trying to climb the ladder. But in 71, President Nixon had a freeze on any company that did business with the government. That you couldn't give them a raise. And I said, here's another block. And I had, remember at 10, I was packing shingles and learned how to, so I started working on the weekends, roofing, and first friends and neighbors, and pretty soon I had more business than I knew what to do with. And so I was making more money on the weekend than I was working after 6 years, 7 years at GE. And I go, what is wrong with this picture?
And going to school too, college.
And going to school too. So I quit GE and went in full time. And
I like it.
It was hard.
You bet on yourself though.
Sir?
You were betting on yourself.
I was betting on myself. And so for 2 years, I found out how little you can live on because I'm buying trucks and tar pots and all this kind of stuff. And I saw what I could make, but I didn't see what all you had to make to finance that deal.
Yeah,
I didn't understand bookkeeping and all that good stuff. So I knew how to work, but I didn't know all the financing and all that other stuff. And cash flow and all that good stuff. I was getting ready to learn. I got a PhD pretty quick overnight. but I stayed at that until I met a guy that you have a handful of people that end up being mentors. And something about a mentor, you pick them. They don't pick you. Because you can say, I want to be your mentor. And people go, well, get away from me, you know. But if somebody looks up to you, likes what you're doing, they see the integrity of what you do and how you live, and they just, if they got a brain in their cell left, they grab onto you. And most of us, if we got 3, 4, or 5 of those that we cross paths with in our life, we're very fortunate. And this guy named Jerry Gray, I love him to death. To this day, we're best of friends. And he hired me because he had a coatings business, but he needed somebody to do the roofing. And I was a subcontractor first, and those coatings didn't pan out. So because in the Gulf Coast, they weren't, it's like solar coatings were back then. Energy savings and all that kind of stuff were important. And so Jerry says, I'm trading my distributorship in the Gulf Coast for Dallas-Fort Worth. And that's how I got to Dallas-Fort Worth. As his superintendent, I sold out to him, cash deal, and we went up there. And that lasted about 2 years, and the market was terrible. And he was from Train Air Conditioning is where he had come from. He's engineer out of Texas A&M, smart guy. And they were trying to get him to come back. And we weren't setting the world on fire. And I said, Jerry, you got that. You need to do that. And I'll go find a job somewhere because it was tight. It was really tight. And it was even worse because I ended up with a $10,000 debt to the IRS, not somebody you want to owe money to, I promise you. And so we're moving to Dallas and these two guys come up just as I'm driving a 22-foot van. Mama's pulling a trailer with my pickup, and we got the kids packed in there. Jeff's on board by now. He's a little bitty tot. He's maybe one, and so I got 6, 5, and 1.5, and we're getting ready to pull out and head to. And we bought a house in Arlington, Texas, Dallas-Fort Worth area. Getting ready to head out, and these two guys come up in black suits, black hats, black tie. They look like the Blues Brother, and they were IRS agents.
Really?
You can make a movie out of it.
Wow, that don't even sound real.
Yeah, they walked us back in the house and interrogated us for 2.5 hours. But it's 4th of July weekend, put us late getting out.
Wow.
And I don't think we got to Dallas till after midnight that night. But I ended up making an appointment and I went to IRS and they said, you're going to have to, why did you not pay us? I said, I never collected enough money to put food on the table, much less pay y'all. Yeah. And I just got behind. And they said, well, we'll work out a payment deal. Every quarter, $10,000. Every quarter, you're going to pay us, what's that? 1250 bucks every quarter. And I mean, it'd be the last day of the quarter and I'm sliding in that building. I still know where that building is in Arlington, Texas. Here's my check. And then I did that for 8 quarters and I got them paid back. I was making $15,000 a year and I was paying them $5,000 each year after taxes. So it was slim pickings for a while, but
it's tough to get going, but it's nice to know the IRS works on holidays, I guess.
And, oh my goodness. So that was, but, and then I went to work for an Australian company, Monier, that manufactured concrete tiles, Spanish type tiles in Duncanville, Texas. And I worked for them 4 years and I became their contracts manager and I trained the crews and I knew roofing. And so I worked for Monier for 4 years and I moved up pretty quick in that company, so much so that they said, we're struggling with the U.S. understanding tile roofing. And they sent me to Australia for a month in 79. Wow. And I got an education, but I came back and I said, look, y'all don't understand. They can buy composition roofs for a fraction of tile and the snow doesn't blow through them and they don't leak. But we get these crazy storms in Texas. And so I developed an underlayment. It was like cardboard with the aluminum on it. Very light, very inexpensive, but it gave us some protection for blowing rain and blowing water through the cracks of the tile. But I was just, my boss said, he came over here. He was from Australia. He came over here to turn Texas around. But he was promised like a CEO position when he went back, and they gave it to the guy that he competed with most. And he said, okay, when I'm done here, I'm going to quit Monier. And they said, we'll save you the time. You're fired.
Okay.
So now he's the guy that was promoting me and he's gone. And the next guy comes in, he goes, I was sent here to fire you. I said, wow. Really? After 2 weeks, he takes me to dinner and he says, Dave Evans, he says, I was sent here to fire you. He said, after just two weeks, I don't agree with everything you're doing, but you're head down and you're trying to make it work. And he said, I can't say that about everybody, but if I don't fire you, they're going to fire me and send somebody else. I said, okay, I know I can dig in and be pretty headstrong, but, you know, I'm just trying to make it work. And I had a pretty good following with it. With the people I worked with, because they knew I wouldn't ask them to do anything I wasn't willing to do myself.
Yeah.
In fact, some of them say, can I break these bundles in half and just carry a half a bundle? I said, if I can carry two up, you think you can carry one? Now I was a smart aleck then, and I got the knees to prove it. I'm paying
you're
for it.
You're better now, though.
I hope so. I hope so. Life will humble you, that's for sure.
It'll straighten you up.
So Jerry, who I had mentioned, that I said, go back to train, a couple of things. He said, I would hire you at train, because he's in a senior sales position. He said, I'd hire you at train. But I had, when I went in business, I said, man, I just can't keep going to school. I got to focus on this business. And so I finished up that semester and I stopped. And he said, you have to have a 4-year degree to work for train. He said, but if I didn't work for train, I'd work for TD Industries. And he didn't get me an interview. He called the guy that hired me, Stan Perry, he called Stan. He said, Stan, I'm going to send you somebody you just need to hire. You can interview me if you want to, but I'm just telling you, you hire the kid because he's got a lot of heart and a lot of tenacity. And just take my word for it. He'll take care of you. And so I interviewed with Stan. Stan's same age as I am, and he's got an engineer. We're both 33 years old by then.
Okay.
And he hired me as a project manager because I'd been managing people and leading people. And I loved it. I loved TD industry so much. And I worked there 10 years. But after 2 years, they had an opportunity in Houston to open the office here. And four of us came down and opened that office. And soon as we got here, we go to ABC function or builder function or something. And I've got Marianne with me. And I've talked her. I talked her into going to Dallas when she said, I ain't going to Dallas. And then I talked her to, I ain't going back to Houston. So I always got a sales job to do with her. She keeps
you were working. Grounded. You were working your influence hard back then.
She keeps me grounded for sure. Or she tests my ideas to make sure I've thought it through, which I usually haven't. I thought of everything. So we're at this dinner out at the medical center, and Jack Blanton, I remember, he's a big oil exec, and he goes, well, the oil patch is in trouble, so construction's going to be in trouble for about 18 to 24 months. So if you got other options, other parts of the country, I'd exercise those options. And she goes, what's he saying? I said, it sounds like it's going to be a bumpy road here for a little while, but only 18 to 24 months. We can tread water that long. And then sure enough, 18 to 24 months turned out to be 7 years.
Wow.
Of drought. I mean, people went to California. People went to Florida. They went to D.C., Maryland, Virginia. That's where the work was. I wasn't that smart. I stayed in Houston, just kept fighting the battle. And after about 90, it started to turn around. But I was really, that's a long time to tread water. And we'd be 120 folks, and then we'd run out of work, and I'd be down to 20, and then I'd have to hire them back. It was a roller coaster. It was a test. Did some great jobs. Project managed hotels, and so I was over my skis technically, but I had some good superintendents, and they watched my back, and I was a young project manager, and they helped me through it. Didn't want to alienate them for sure, because they had your back, and they keep you out of trouble.
Yeah.
So I left there, and then ended up going to a company called Acrid Air. And the guy that I'd kind of been with in Dallas, he took my place, and he stayed in that place for 25 years.
Wow.
And so it was a win for me. I got a new lease on life, and it was a win for him because he finished out his 40-year career with TD Industries. So
okay.
Where one chapter closes, another opens, you know?
Yeah, and somewhere right around there is where you discovered Covey, because you just said 1990.
Oh, yeah. So in 82 is when TD brought in Covey. TD was so, so great because they brought in Stephen Covey. They brought in, remember, In Search of Excellence, Tom Peters?
That's a great book.
He was kind of a precursor to Jim Collins.
Okay.
In Search of Excellence. Great book. TD was such a great investor in their people. They had most of the people in our sheet metal department were Vietnamese refugees. And Jack Lowe, he's one of those mentors. Jack Lowe Sr. was the founder. Founded the year I was born, 1946, right after World War II. Rice graduate, brilliant guy. And so you just get lucky sometime and cross paths with people like that.
Yeah.
And there is not a day in my life that I don't think about Jack Lowe Sr. and the impact he had. Because they'd say, Jack, why, you know, you're the president. Why don't you driving a Cadillac? He said, I don't care about none of that stuff. I think he had one suit. He didn't care. He just didn't care. All he cared about people. And if he ever saw you, he knew you. If he ever met your family, he knew their names. He never forgot. He was just, he was an amazing guy. And so Jack Lowe is one of those guys. Jerry Gray is one of those guys.
That's outstanding. So you had those guys and you had introduction to all of the leadership development type content, personal development. Yeah. And then you hit, so you got exposed to that before that 7 year rough patch. You had just got introduced to
those are the only things that kept me going. The good Lord did not bless me with, I'd say in the intellect department, he gave me about a C+. And in the attitude, probably 80-20, 80%, I'm usually right on. 20%, I drift over in self-doubt and worrying about stuff you shouldn't worry about and distractions. And I quickly recognize it and get back on the 80% side. But when it came to perseverance and tenacity, he gave me a full boatload. Thank goodness, because I was going to need it.
It sounds like you needed it several times.
Oh, yeah.
You're probably not done needing it. So I just wanted to make sure the listeners were paying attention that somewhere in that times when you got exposed to the
absolutely
growth, you never stopped that. So catch back up on your story where you were. I guess that's where were you at there?
Well, I was working at TD and I had this friend. He was a supplier, Gary Wilbanks. And Gary said, Ken, my dad, who I'd worked with his dad, and now the boys, Gary and his brother, Greg, they're taking over the business. And he said, we are doing all plumbing supplies, equipment and accessories. He said, we want to expand that into HVAC. And he'd asked me three times. And every time I say, no, I need to see this through. I need to take care of the one that brought me, and I'm loyal to TD. And finally, he came his third time. And I mean, I'm just beat up. I'm really beat up and just running out of gas. And so I said, okay, I'm going to do it. And so I went to work for him to build up his HVAC, the air conditioning side of his business.
What year was that, Ken?
That was in 90. So okay. I went to work for TD in 80. So I'd been 10 years with them.
Okay.
And during that time, remember I told you, Jerry couldn't hire me at Trane because I didn't have a 4-year degree. So while I was doing all that, I went back to school, and TD also had a supplement. If you made grades, they didn't pay for bad ones, but they paid for good ones. So I started at Tarrant County College in Fort Worth, and then I switched to University of Texas at Arlington. And then when they moved me back to Houston, I went back to, I had transferred from that South Texas Junior College, which is now University of Houston downtown, a beautiful college. Okay. I had transferred from South Texas to University of Houston Central Campus before we moved to Dallas. I came back to that same campus and I switched from engineering to business. And I said, I'm 33. It's going to take me 10 years to graduate, taking 3 to 6 hours a semester. But I'm going to be 43, whether I do it or not. So I just decided to do it.
So many people miss that point. They say, it's going to take me 10 years. I'll be 50, whatever, when I graduate. Yeah. Well, you're going to be 50, whatever, anyway, if you don't graduate, right?
Yeah. And I bought my graduation present to me was a class ring, and it said 89 on it. I graduated in December 89. And I can remember being embarrassed that I'm 43 and my class ring says I just graduated. But I got over that. I like it. I say, I'm shameless now. Hey, you can't embarrass me now.
You were hungry.
I did that for 1 year, and the people I was calling on said, why'd you move down on the food chain? You're a contractor. Why'd you go over to the, supply side? And so they started offering me jobs. And so I'm interviewing with this one contractor, and a guy named Tom Beatty heard about it. He said, Ken, you better talk to me before you agree to go to work for anybody. And Tom had been in business 10 years, and his accountant said, you need to hire a general manager to run this business, or you need to sell it, retire, get out of it, because it's going to kill you. It's going to put you in the early grave, because he worried about everything. And so I met him at a Steak and Ale restaurant on 290 and Tacoma, right off of 610 in Houston. And we sat down, and before we finished lunch, we wrote out my contract and compensation on a Steak and Ale napkin. And every year we'd pull out that napkin, calculate my bonus. And I remember telling him, I said, I want a 10% of profits. And he said, 10%. I said, if I bring you $100,000, you won't give me 10 grand of it. And he said, done. And we both signed it. That was a great relationship. And he's retired. And we both got back together later and had another business as things go apart, and then they come back together. And he worked here 10 years, and then he retired. I stayed. He keeps saying, when are you going to retire? Man, you can only play so much bad golf, and I only like fishing if they're jumping in the boat. So
so he basically told you every time you make 100 grand, give him 90, and you said, okay.
That's right.
I'd be like, go, man, make it happen. What you need from me?
It was so good. It was so great. Both Ken and Jeff had worked with me at TD, and Jeff just working in the shop. He was getting ready for summer jobs. He was going to school, but Ken had come back from Texas Tech. And he said, well, that's enough of that. I don't want to be an architect after all, but he was working in the field, and he immediately went up from, just hanging sheet metal and running pipe to next thing I knew he was assistant project manager, because he's a brilliant kid. He and Jeff both are just
They're awesome. They're smart. I think a lot of both of them there.
And so guy. I had Ken running a 400 hospital plumbing and air when he was 21. Wow. And everybody's going, oh, he gets that opportunity because he's your son. I said, no, he gets that opportunity because he'll work for $20 an hour and I don't pay him any overtime. And he's working 60 hours a week, and I can't do that to anybody else. So I said, how much of that action you want? And most of them said, no, I don't want to do that. But it was a good investment in him, because he is just amazing. So those two boys, neither one of them, Jeff went to Blend for 2 years, came home, dad taught him everything I know, I'm done with that. So neither one of them graduated. And yet they've got a phenomenal business. I mean, They're north of $200 million a year. Now, revenues don't mean profit, but you got to keep your arms around it. And that's no easy task, but they stay full time at it. I'm really, really proud of them.
So they built Kilgore Industries. You were not there at the beginning, or you were from the very beginning of Kilgore Industries?
They followed me from out of college to Accurate Air. It was Tom's company. And I was GM there for 7 years, and we took it from break even, and we put a percent, additional percent bottom line every year. So we were 7%. Profitable, and we had gone from 10 million to 16, almost 17 million. And Comfort Systems USA, the roll ups were the big deal. And they got to Tom, and he sold the company. I went, oh man, we've done all this work and we're just hitting our stride, and you sell out. And so I stayed there 3 more years, and I got to learn what a public company was all about. And it was pretty crazy times. A lot of those roll-ups during that mid to late 90s, they didn't make it. They folded. A lot of those companies bought their companies back, pennies on the dollar.
Yeah.
And in 2000, Jeff was doing great. He had started out as a service tech and moved up quick. No big surprise, because he's a salesman. That guy's he's a salesman. And Ken Jr. as well. He developed Jeff on the service side, Ken Jr. on the contracting side, and they really complement each other. Yep. Well, where Jeff's strong, where Jeff's weak, Ken's strong, and vice versa.
Yep.
And they really complement each other well. So in 2000, Corporate Comfort, that we were a part of, asked me to take a region. And they said, your name keeps coming up. In fact, it had come up in spring of 2000, and I turned it down because I said, my mom is fighting cancer. And I'm the eldest of all the kids, and I just feel like I need to stay close to home. And so she passed in April. And I mean, like the next month, they called and they said, they came to my mom's funeral and they were very supportive. And then they said, now what's your excuse? And I said, I don't have one. And so they gave me the Southeast region, which was 24 companies with presidents and CFOs and $240 million and probably 1,500 employees. And they were from Austin, Texas to San Juan, Puerto Rico.
Okay.
Now my kids are up and out. Thank goodness is the only way I pulled it off, but I would leave on Monday and I would come home late Thursday or Friday. And Marianne she wasn't soccer mom anymore. So she said, well, this is okay. I'll see you on the weekend. And so we lived that way for that 3 years. And then I took my worst company, Atlas, and I said, they were trying to consolidate because Comfort wasn't doing that great then. And they said, well, we got too many RVPs and we're trying to figure out. And I said, I tell you what, I'll volunteer to take this troubled company. I'll be CEO of Atlas, one of those 24 companies. And that will help the consolidation at the RVP role. And when I went into that RVP role, months later, the boy said, Dad, we've been talking about doing our own thing. You're rolling. So it's now or never. We're young. We're going to do it because make or break, now's the time to do it. Not when we're your age. And so that's when they left Accurate and Comfort Systems, and when it went to work for themselves. And we never competed. Like even when I stepped back down, when I went to the Atlas, which was a multifamily, HVAC multifamily company. And they did stick and brick and they did vertical product, high rise.
Yep.
And they had lost money every year. They always were chipping away at my regional bonus. Region was like first or second in the nation, but they were always trimming my bonuses because they were always in the tank doing stupid stuff, you know, doing illegal stuff.
Okay.
And so I went over there to kind of clean things up. And that was 2003. 2004, we were doing so good. One, I'd let the Atlas boys go. They were no longer there. I actually gave them raises, but when it came up for renewal? I didn't renew. It's been good. And we turned it around. 2004 was so good that the CEO of Comfort, Bill Murdy, brought the board for the board meeting that September to Atlas. And wow. And I was pretty proud of my guys. And I had this one guy that he's running, George Mazareff. He has come to Kilgore, probably 2014. And he started multifamily vertical product here. So he has the multifamily. So even when you go away, a lot of times you come back together, you stay friends. That's the important thing. You stay friends.
It's business. That's absolutely. Let me just say real quick while you got a second in between there. I know you've heard this, but you just told one example of it. You've probably seen hundreds of examples, but there are no bad teams, only bad leaders.
That's true.
When you took over that organization that was failing, you said in a year later it was fine, pretty much with the same team. But if they didn't need to be on there, you got them off. That's why
It was the same team. It was just the two brothers at the top, and it was a second generation company.
Yeah.
But they were just skimming. It was not good. It was not good stuff. But I remembered we're presenting to the board at our facility. And George goes, and they were asking George, and they're asking us, how'd you manage this turnaround? And we said, a lot of hard work for one thing, and just focus and taking care of our people and training and cleaning up this the facilities and working on productivity and lean and all those kind of things. And George goes, the way we do this is infinitely scalable. And I go, George, shut up. Man, you don't want to beat your chest. Every time I say we've arrived, we haven't, you know. it's a dead end. So I've hit those dead ends enough times. I don't like to beat my chest and toot my own horn. Just keep a low profile and keep chugging, man. Don't back off that accelerator. It'll get you in trouble every time.
That's right.
But then, with Exxon and Sarbanes-Oxley, and everybody gets all nervous, and I lose George. Mm. They came in, and we were in D.C., And one night, and I get a call from the COO, and he says, "Are you by yourself?" And I said, "Well, I'm with George and Jody, our GM and our president. I'm CEO, and we've got work all over Texas, Florida, New England. We're everywhere." And he said, "Call me when you get back to your hotel, which our office up there was in Manassas, Virginia." So, okay. So I get there and he goes, "Can you tell me about this invoice?" And it was an invoice that they billed. And if you bill an invoice, but then you back it out in the next period, you can accelerate earnings. And a lot of that went on. And it was even encouraged before Sarbanes-Oxley. But after Enron, I said Exxon, debacle and Sarbanes-Oxley legislation, you broke those rules, man, you could be in Hotel Fed and you won't go there.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. And so they just said, "George, you bent the rules. We know we used to ask you to do it, but we told you not to do it anymore. We changed our mind." And so I lost my right arm, and we went, that was 2006. In fact, when I lost George, January 2006 was so dark that's when I started writing my morning message. just to try to keep the troops with their head up.
Yeah.
Every day's a new day. Just keep going. And I've been doing it ever since January 2006.
Yep. I see them every morning. I'm still on your list.
And I said, I write that message to me and then I just share it with my friends. I need to stay focused all the time too. Cause any of us can get beat down. Any of us can get discouraged and lose our way. So just got to stay the course. You got to keep reading those books. And if you forget, read them again.
That's right.
I stayed there. We were still doing good. Even with that exodus, we were still doing good. And they questioned me and they said, well, we don't think, even though you were CEO, we don't think you were aware of this. And my CFO, they questioned him and they sent us both. But because of that infraction, my CFO and I got to pay back a third of our bonuses for the previous year.
Mm.
Big deal.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Our mamas were not happy, but all of us are still friends. And we rocked on along and still held our head high. And then something called the real estate bubble burst in 2008.
Yeah, the Great Recession landed on us.
Holy cow. And guess what? We were high-rise experts in HVAC, and we had all these high-rise units, condominiums coast to coast, and all of them pre-sold, and nobody posted because – the second they did, they're going to lose $25,000, $30,000, maybe $100,000 because everything was tanking. The prices were going south. So nobody posted to close and we couldn't get paid on any of that work.
Wow. I got $200 million. That happened again.
I got two. Yeah. Yeah. People forget. They don't learn those lessons or they don't remember those lessons. They forget those lessons. Yeah. It could happen again, and it will to some extent. You just don't know how much.
Yep.
Anything can happen. It's going to happen. It ain't if, it's when. So
yep.
There's going to be bumps in the road. Just tighten your seatbelt.
Everything I watch says this pretty soon it's going to happen. Yeah. It's already happening in some housing markets.
That's true.
Because I follow Florida pretty good, and there's some of those places. Actually, Rhea and I may move to Florida sometime in the near future, and we've been watching that. And there's a lot of places we want to go. Those houses already to drop 50% from where they were not too long ago. It's coming. It ain't hit our area yet. It's still super expensive right here, but it's coming. And commercial real estate is really, that's the worst of it. That's the part that's about to get hit like a sledgehammer. If people ain't aware of that, I hope they paying attention to what's coming, but go ahead with your story.
Well, by 2008, by 2007, we were already into it. And so August of 2007, we were at 1,700 people, and I had to get it down to like 700 people.
Wow.
That is not a fun job.
No, that ain't a fun job at all, is it?
That was the darkest year of my entire business career, having to go. And a lot of them, we got jobs elsewhere, but the whole country was hurting. And everybody was tightening their belt. And so at January of 2008, they said, you hired this president, Jody Bowe, and he's good guy, and you've trimmed it down. And so we're going to eliminate your position. We'll just have him as president. We don't need a CEO that's scaling that business back. And I said, okay. And they gave me a year severance, and I had taken a cut in pay as things. I took a 20% cut in pay. We're going to reinstate that level that you were at, and we're going to pay you for a year severance. So I ended up getting back together with Tom Beatty, and we started Integrity Air, and we did private sector prisons all over the U.S. for a number of years, from 2008 to 2011. And in 2011, we got slow. That market slowed down, and we were loaning people to Ken and Jeff, and they said, man, y'all don't have heir apparents. Why don't we just buy y'all? We could use y'all. We need dad's licenses. He's got licenses coast to coast. And so that's how we got to Kilgore, and all of us got back under the same roof.
That's a cool story. And I really appreciate you sharing it for a lot of reasons. One reason, a lot of people at Kilgore hopefully are going to watch this and learn about your story. I mean, you don't have time most often to sit down and tell everybody that works there your story. A lot of them probably would be interested in hearing it. I know Jason's going to love to hear it. I've enjoyed hearing it. So tell me, I mean, I heard the lessons all throughout it, but tell me some of all these personal development and leadership lessons. A lot of them you were applying before you ever even heard about them in a book because they were just in you. But when you heard about them in a book, you were aligned with them and you said, oh, I've been doing that great. And then you learned other stuff that maybe you ain't ever thought about, and you started applying that and you got even better. But what's some of them key principles throughout that story right there that really allowed you to go from frontline entry level factory worker, just like I was doing, to accomplish all of that stuff? For any listeners out there who may be still on the front lines, what are some key leadership personal principles that they can look in the mirror and apply?
Well, I think for me, it was one of my struggles was, I would struggle like when I went to work for Accurate, man, here's Tom's the owner, and he's hired me, and he introduced me as his hatchet man. I said, Tom, you're not doing me any favor. This is y'all get it right, or he's going to, you know, that's
fear and intimidation is not the way to lead.
Very yeah, well. That's not much of an introduction, Tom. And so I was really struggling with the culture that was there and resistance, the new guy coming in and all that kind of stuff. And so, and I shared that with Marianne. She said, you know, I know this little lady that works with personal development and organizational development, a little lady named Jean Yaunt, and you might talk to her. And so I started going to her, and she said, well, what are your values? And I said, well, what do you mean? And so she said, well, I mean, what is it in life that you think's important? And so I said, what I believe is important is honesty. That's first and foremost. And I said, trust. You gotta have trust. Any relationship's gotta be built on trust. And respect. I just was always uncomfortable anytime people were disrespectful. You don't have to agree, but you got to, if you're going to communicate, you got to maintain a respectful, a respect for the other person and their thoughts. And you got to stay humble. Every time I saw anybody get bigger than his britches, he's getting ready to take a fall.
Yeah.
And so I took those principles and this was October 21st, 2004. I took those principles and I went back and it started working. It just started working. I started listening to people. Seek first to understand before you seek to be understood. And so all those tools were there. And so this is a plaque from that presentation that I did.
Oh yeah.
And it says it's told by Ken Kilgore, CEO, October 24th, 2004. That's a while back. And it's honesty. This is essential element to relationships. Without it, we do not have a suitable foundation to build a successful business or relationship. All that came out of the books. I'm Not into absolutes is a rule. I say don't use them. But the necessity of complete honesty is one of those non-negotiables in life. You know, some things are just non-negotiable. Trust. We have to have complete trust in each other, each of our partners. Trust includes the ability to understand that each of our partners will make mistakes, but we must trust them to learn from each experience and share the experience so all can benefit. And last, but and respect, we will always have differences of opinion as our differences are unique views allow us to be greater than the sum of our parts. We must always deal with our partners, associates, and clients with a respectful tone. That to me, there's no excuse. And all of us have been disrespectful, not meaning to or intentionally, you know, but it's a principle. It is a principle that is a centered principle that doesn't vary. Whether you do or not, it doesn't change.
No, it doesn't change.
And humility, regardless of what level of success we attain, it's our business or our personal lives, it is essential that we remain humble. To become arrogant in our opinion of ourselves or the treatment of others is the kiss of death for any organization or individual. So what I got out of those books, and one of the books my daughter gave me, in 1995, I was in Promise Keepers. So she gave me a Promise Keepers book, which I just about wore the cover off of.
Okay.
And that's probably not enough. I should have wore it completely out by now. and I've been blessed that someone gave me 365 meditations for men. Taking time out, stop and think about what you're doing. This one my daughter and son-in-law gave me. 1 month to live. If you got 1 month to live, how are you going to live it?
Yeah. I bet you live it on purpose.
That's right. And this they gave me, Upmost for His Highest. And it's a journal, and it's got a daily. And I go back and read some of this stuff, and it's... It's, you know, you want to see me cry like a baby, I'll just start reading some of this stuff. Because as much trouble as maybe, and it's about wore out too, it's falling apart. As much trouble are, you know, circumstances and things that happen, you know, bad things happen to good people and vice versa. it's just important to continue to go back to those lessons. I tell you about TD. TD introduced me to this servant leader, the servant as leader. And I believe that is first and foremost. If you can't serve, you can't lead. And you get that right. Robert Greenleaf, man, I think this is probably in the 70s, maybe. Yeah, 70. It was written in 1970. And he was a good friend of Jack Lowe Sr., who I talked about.
Okay.
And, of course, my 1989 copy of original copy of Seven Habits and my eighth habit.
Oh, that's a good one too.
My eighth habit. And then I got all these people feeding me called Mac and Rhea. And I got all my notes. I show you all my flags and my notes. I write all over them. More recent, The One Thing. And focusing, this one says, This one says, what's the one thing I can do such that by doing it, everything else will be easier or unnecessary? And it shows the big picture. What's my one thing? And then it talks about a dot in the middle of that, small focus. What's the one thing right now?
Yeah.
So just thank the Lord for audible.com, because I can eat them up and use. And recently a lot of management books, but nothing like leadership. That a lot of military, Make Your Own Bed, Admiral William H. McRaven. He's got a number of books that I've read, an author I really like. So I've been blessed that I just accidentally I got all of Jim Collins' books. I tell you about Good to Great. That was Great by Choice, Good to Great, In Search of Excellence by Tom Peters. So, but if I don't have but one book to go to, I go to that Bible every time, because that keeps me focused on what's really important. We're only here for a little while. What we do for those around us, how we touch them, that's what matters. How we watch our brothers and sisters and have their back and lift them up when they need to be lifted up, and kind of get serious with them when they need to be, have a little tough love. So
yeah. So what all have you done at Kilgore since you arrived there? What are you doing now? But what all have you done? Are you still doing the same kind of thing since you've been there the whole time?
When I first came in, I finished the work that Tom and I had sold, and HVAC and plumbing. And I had some people, we got into vertical high rise projects, and got Kilgore into vertical high rise, and did Austin, Dallas. And then I got, this part of my story too. And then I got sick. At first, I've always worked out and jogged and all that stuff. And I think it was a polar at the time, but I thought it was broke because it's like 220 beats per minute. I said, this stupid thing's broke. And then I was doing a stress test one day, and he called me and he said, I got to send you to the electrical heart doctor. I'm a muscle heart doctor. And he sent me to Dr. Rami, and he did ablation, and I had some short circuits, and he fixed those about 95%, not 100%, but I wear a heart monitor, so I know if I'm getting over the top. So I had that surgery, that procedure in September of 2013, and I'd already been diagnosed with prostate cancer. And so 2 weeks later, I had that surgery, and we thought we caught it early. But when I went back, they said, well, pathology report says we need to follow up with radiation. So I had 4 months of that in 2014. And so it took me most of 2014 I never really, I think I missed a week of work with the surgery. I missed the day with the heart ablation, but I never felt myself. And the boys they kind of took the load off of me. And so
that was 2014 or 2019?
2013. 2013. Okay. Yeah. I'd only been here, that's 2011. So I'd only been here 3-4 years when I got into all that. And I thought, well, I guess I'm at the end of the road. And I can remember I was 68, and they took me to lunch and they said, well, Dad, what do you think? I said, well, I think I can make 70. Well, we just passed 70 and kept going. First, I took over HR because we had a void there.
Yeah.
And then we got a full-time HR person, and I took over contracts because we kept getting dinged on contract language. So, and I'm still doing that.
Okay.
And I took over safety because if we didn't get safe, we had a fatality in 2014. If we didn't get that fixed, electrocution.
Wow.
So if we didn't get that fixed, we're going to be out of business. So that's been a focus ever since. I got a great team there. I got, and then they asked me if I'd take over central administration. It was scattered to each of the departments, and they said, we really feel like we'll have better control, financial controls, if we centralize the administration.
Yeah.
All the work goes out in the field, but centralized. So I've got six ladies that work for me in that department. So and then I've got training. So right now I've got 8 classes Monday through Thursday that my sweet wife allows me to teach at home in my home office via the internet.
Okay.
And that's usually between 5:30 and 8:30 at night. 4 nights a week.
How many nights?
4.
Oh, so you full blown 77 and make, and you go to the gym. You didn't mention about your gym time every day.
Yeah. I post at the gym every day that I'm in town. I post it Monday through Friday at 6:30, and I'm finished by 8 and rush over here and by
make 8:00. It happen all day.
I'm buckled in, ready to go.
That's outstanding. And then once a month, you get on those Saturday calls. What does that make you feel like to see those people engaged like that? Because they're not getting paid. They volunteer. Because you're always gung-ho on there when you're talking. But
I am. You know, I've had a lot of guys that I share with them and they get, oh yeah, man, it's, and they get, and then, you know, it's, I think I got it from you that you're the average of the 5 closest friends. And, yes. I've had some of them say, I guess I need to change some friends out.
Yeah, I got it from somebody else, but I say that a lot. Maybe it was Jim Rohn. I can't remember.
Yeah. But they say they're going to, but they don't.
Yeah.
And so I'm always encouraged by the ones that come back every month, not, you know, once a year or something like that. And I every once in a while, I'll be stuck with some continuing education that I've got to be in class and stuff that I can't get out of. But if I can, I'm there. And Marianne reminds me, you're on my time, buddy. You know, I said, yes, ma'am. I'll get in and get out. And then we'll get on with my honeydew list. That, and Saturdays and Sundays are dedicated to her. If she's doing something, and I'll go in and crank up the computer and the heartbeat and do some work. But I'm going to take care of her list and take care of her because that's her time. So some tonight from 5:00 or 4:30 till Saturday till Monday morning at 5 a.m. It's all her time.
That's a good way to do it, right?
Payback. I owe her big time.
There's no doubt with that story you just told. You were not there a lot of times, right?
That's right.
You got to make up. And that's important stuff. So have you even gotten on and looked at any of our video training that you guys have available, the Blue Collar Leadership Academy? Have you happened to have even logged into that and seen
I have not.
Okay.
I'm ashamed to say it's in my spiral notebook to do. However, I have taken the Blue Collar Leadership and a lot of the Defining Influence and Rhea's new book. I've taken a lot of that and both the Blue Collar series on. I started telling them, you're influencing, you're a leader where you're at, you know, and I've used that extensively blended in with our training. So we'll work on industry knowledge, but I say, if you ain't taking this along with it, you know, you're not going to be all you can be. And so it is on my list. I did look at the other videos you sent me. I was scared. I said, I don't know if I can talk more than 15 minutes, but
you didn't know if you could talk over 15 minutes.
That's right.
For the interview.
Yes.
You're doing all right, Mr. Ken.
I'm scared.
Yeah. You really thought about not coming on, didn't you?
Well, I thought about it. I thought about it, and I tell you why I thought about it. What's that book? Oh man, I always had instant recall. The one thing. It's the one thing.
You had it a second ago there.
Yeah, I did. But at the one thing, it's got a door hanger at the back of it. And it says, I'm working on the one thing. I don't have the courage to tell you no, but this door hanger is doing it for me. And so anytime anybody asks me for anything, man, I'm in. But I've said, man, you got to, yeah, here it is. I say, you got to stop and make sure you're not overcommitting yourself. So, in case I can't say no, this sign will have to do it for me. So I think that's, and the other side says, do not disturb. I'm working on my one thing. So I think that's pretty cool. But I only had to think about, I watched your videos and I said, those guys are pretty good. They got some stories. So, you know, but I have a hard time telling anybody no. Somebody comes, you got a minute? It's never a minute. But I don't have an open door policy, but I got a window. So the door hangers don't do a lot of good because you get a minute, which I'm fine with. It's nice to be honored by people, even, you know, they honor you when they say, I'd like your opinion. So I try not to give them answers. I try to just ask them questions, and they come up with it.
What's one of your favorite leadership questions to ask someone that you ask quite often?
Start with the end in mind. Where are you going? Where do you want to end up? And I get this. You mean next week? Dinner? You talking about dinner? You talking breakfast? What are we talking about? I'm talking about where you want your profession to take you.
Yeah.
And they get on me because I have a one-on-one with each individual once a month. Sometimes it's two, their supervisor and I, but they'll say, this is supposed to be an hour. And we went an hour and 15 minutes and I got work to do. And I go, this is my only chance each month to have this. Quit turning the crank and focus on where are we going? This is what we're doing, but where are we going? And I can't answer that question for them. But I said, what resources do you need to get there? If you want to be the CFO, he ain't going to be here forever. If that's what you want to be, start with the end in mind. Well, what's that going to take? Well, probably I need a CPA. What do you got to do that? Well, I probably need a degree or study in finance, and let's just peel the onion.
Figure it out.
Ask the question and then let them answer it. And then we go from there.
So where are you headed, Mr. Ken?
Well, I'm going to enjoy what I do every day as long as I can do it. And the good Lord will tell me mentally or physically when it's time to stop.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's not going to be stop. Hopefully it's going to be slowed down, but you know, it's not up to me.
You're still wide open though at the moment, right? You sound like, I mean, you're more wide open than most people who 40 years old trying to get somewhere.
Marianne wouldn't say that. you look like an old man rolling out of bed. I said, I got to roll out easy, get everything moving. So, you know, I can remember being young and just bounding out of bed, and I just feel the blood pulsing through my veins. Well, I kind of ease into the day, but I get an early start so I can still hit the gym at 6:30. So
you look good. You look phenomenal, especially to be 77, working so hard and doing all that stuff. You look good. You sound good. So you provided us with your email and your phone number. So why did you want to make that available? What purpose should somebody want to call you for? Or email you? Why do you want us to share that out?
I think that if anybody that is struggling with an answer or a problem, they probably don't have a problem that I hadn't had something similar one time or another. We've all lost loved ones. We've all seen tragedies. We've all had tough patches at work. Anybody that's been married any time is going to hit a bump. I've hit them all and didn't navigate them all real smooth, but I found a way to get back on track. And if I can, you know, just listen, if I can be there to listen, sometimes people find the answer just telling their story.
Yeah.
And, if that's all they need me to do, then I'll do that. And if they need more, I'll give them all the time they need to find their way.
Phenomenal. That's a great example of servant leadership. I talk to so many people all the time because I put my number out everywhere on my podcast, on my videos. I mean, it's everywhere. People say, why you put your number out everywhere? There it is right there. So people say, why you put your number out everywhere? I'm like, I want somebody to call me so I can help them. That's why I put my number out. Same thing you just said in a different way, right? I tell people I ain't always available, but I'm always open.
Yeah.
Right. Right now I'm wide open with you, but I ain't available for anybody else in the moment for the last couple of hours or so, but I'm always open. Yeah. I tell people, call me. It don't matter, 24/7, 365. If I'm busy, it ain't going to bother me. My phone is going to be turned off or whatever, or if I'm speaking or if I'm traveling. So thank you, Mr. Ken. That's a really big deal. Is there anything you wish you'd have said or you wish I'd have asked you that you haven't said or shared that you'd like to?
You know, all of us have enough stories as we reflect from the time, from our earliest memories to today, that one thing will generate a memory or a thought. And you know, you asked me enough questions, I probably took your ear off. And
I love you.
Here I was worried about not being able to fill your time. And I don't know how much you're going to be able to use of that.
We're going to use all of it. We ain't editing nothing out. We don't put nothing out. If somebody wants to cut it out, they can skip forward or skip, you know, whatever, just like my podcast. I don't worry about the length. Some people say, well, I want to have it so long. I'm like, people can fast forward or reverse or
yeah,
whatever. So I put it all. You don't know what somebody's going to need. You don't know which part of it. I mean,
the only thing I do tell people, like I showed, somebody said, did you get that email? And I showed them my phone. And my phone has where it shows your emails. I go, yeah, I got emails. And right now I got 21,007 unopened emails. I said, there's a grenade in there somewhere for sure. It's a minefield. I said, send me an email by all means, but text me. Text me and say, I need you to go find my email. And I will do it.
Yeah.
Call me, text me. Email, I'll get to it sooner or later.
But 21,000.
You want instant gratification, you better tell me, go look for your email. Because there's just too much stuff hits it, you know?
After a certain point, after you get so many of those emails, you just have to say, if somebody needs me, they're going to find me some
other
way.
Exactly.
And that's
right.
What becomes a problem.
If it's that important, you know, we'll get there. But most of them know that. They know, text Ken, please check my email. Or I sent you this at such and such a time. So, and when it fails, I said, what's rule number one? And they'll recite it. Text you if I need you. I said, okay.
Yep.
Call me or text me. If I answer every call and I respond to every text. But I don't respond to every email because I got 20,000 of them sitting there. I won't live long enough to respond to all of them because all of them aren't worth responding to.
Most of them you just copied on probably 75%.
Yeah, half of them is just stuff. And I mean, somebody's always sending you, trying to sell you something.
That junk too.
No.
A lot of junk. And I just like to share with any listeners or folks, give Kilgore a plug, Mr. Ken, because I mean, you guys' headquarters, I'm just telling you, that headquarters building, it's just awesome. It's just unbelievable, the headquarters facility, the everything you guys are doing. But give Kilgore a plug. Who are you guys as a whole? What do you do? Who should be interested in working there? Who should not be interested in working there?
Well, I think that first and foremost, we can interview somebody pretty quick and tell if they're going to fit. And we've got everything from accounting to, we got all the support staff. So anybody that's into accounting or administrative duties, HR, insurance, payroll, you know, all that stuff that just supports the business. So we got all those opportunities. Plus we have SBU leaders. That's like Jason. He's over all our electrical. We'll have one that's over all HVAC and plumbing and over service. And so there's all those opportunities, and all of the people that worked up to those positions, senior project managers, project managers, assistant project managers working their way up, people in the field that like turning wrenches, that are young and like being out there. I say, learn and get your particular trade or trades, because I like to cross trade those folks,
yeah.
But also learn management skills, leadership skills. We manage stuff, we lead people, and prepare yourself, because you won't always be comfortable to go out, and you won't even be able to go out on your best day and be productive. But you can earn or bring value to the company through other people more than you ever did turning a wrench. But there's plenty of days when I'd rather be out there turning a wrench, even if it's at home fixing stuff. What do you say? You never take the blue collar out of a blue collar guy.
I don't think so. It's just who we are. It don't matter where we sit. It's just who we are.
That's right. Yep.
So that's good stuff. So Mr. Ken, I really appreciated, you know, having you on. I know you're a busy man, and it means a lot to me and Rhea both. You know, she's in the background running this thing, making it all look like I know what I'm doing. But if it wasn't for her back there, I wouldn't be doing this. I wouldn't do a lot of things that I do if it wasn't for her helping me make it easy for me. But I really appreciate it. It means a lot to me. I look forward to, you know, sharing this out when it comes out. And I'm sure a lot of people in Kilgore are going to get to see your story. And for years and years and years, who knows how long this is going to be out there. And it's also just a testament to you and your tenacity. It's 77. I mean, I just love it. Every time I see you making it happen, I just love it. You're a big inspiration. So thank you very much for being on the show.
Yep. It's an honor.
All right, folks. I hope you enjoyed it. Reach out to Mr. Ken, reach out to me, reach out to Rhea. If you need to talk to somebody about personal growth, leadership development, or check on Kilgore. If you're in the Texas area, they operate all around Texas. And sometimes I know Jason's doing stuff outside of Texas. So check them out. And that's it for today's show. Talk to you next time.
Thank you, Mac.
Make it happen or someone else will. It might as well be you. Are you serious about taking your career and your life to the next level and beyond? Check out Max Story's Blue Collar Leadership Series books and others, now available on audio, along with paperback and ebooks at Amazon, iTunes, and Audible. Please visit BlueCollarLeadership.com to learn about Max books, programs, special offers, certifications, and more. Thank you for listening to the Blue Collar Leadership Podcast.